The Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade relied heavily on the argument that, quote, a right to an abortion is not deeply rooted in the nation's history and traditions. Paul Solman takes a look now at that history as part of our continuing coverage of America After Roe.
An abortion recipe from 1748.
The recipe itself that he gives is remarkably explicit, detailed, and for the time, medically accurate.
English professor Molly Farrell, discussing a book she studied here at the American Antiquarian Society in Worcester, Massachusetts, while researching how early Americans used numbers. Published by Benjamin Franklin, The American Instructor was a do-it-yourself guide to various life hacks for colonial Americans.
There's all different types of recipes for gleet, for dropsy, for fever. And I saw one that said suppression of the courses. Maybe it was because I myself at the time was pregnant and thinking about these things, but it connected with me. Like, doesn't that mean a missed period when the courses are suppressed?
So courses is menstruation. But how do we jump from that to abortion?
So this was a typical parlance used in the time to indicate that we're talking about pregnancy. It both uses terms like suppression of the courses that were common to other recipes for abortion.
To Farrell and others, the book's recipe of traditional abortion-inducing roots like pennyroyal and angelica shows that the practice was as deeply rooted in American history as opposition to it.
Explicitly, this is for young unmarried women. This is a problem that they usually have. And it says that they should not long for pretty fellows or any other trash whatsoever. Basically, what got you, you know, into this mess was longing for pretty fellows.
Or falling for the lines delivered by pretty fellows.
Yes. I mean, it's remarkably explicit, actually. It's really direct.
Do you think that historical context has gotten enough attention in this debate?
I think historical context rarely gets enough attention in any debate. Context
American Antiquarian Society President Scott Casper.
For example, we might look, or some might look, just at a series of laws or what is or is not in laws without looking at what's happening in popular practice, in the press, what people's ideas are in culture. We forget often that the past was just as complex and contested as our present is. Many people try to find in the past what resonates with their own views in the present.
So, a reference from 1788 in a copy of a sort of sex manual of the day that resonates for those opposed to abortion.
Midwives are admonished by no means to prescribe such medicines as will cause abortion, though desired, which is a high degree of wickedness and may be termed murder.
On the other hand, that same text, Aristotle's masterpiece, was published many times, says curator of books Elizabeth Pope.
So out of those more than 60 editions, only a few, a handful, have those directions to midwives that I mentioned that describe abortion as murder. But even in that instance, they do seem to be saying that midwives were providing abortions to people who had desired them.
Then there's the case of Englishwoman Anne Lohman, who became a midwife known as Madame Restelle. In 1839, she placed an ad in the New York Sun which read, "Is it moral for parents to increase their families regardless of consequences to themselves or the well-being of their offspring when a simple, easy, healthy, and certain remedy is within our control?" In 1847, Madame Restelle was arrested and tried and demonized in the Police Gazette and elsewhere, says graphic arts curator Lauren Hughes.
So cartoons, for example, painting Madame Restelle as a very dark figure, or cartoons showing Madame Restelle's offices full of pregnant women who are uneducated, who are seeking help but are in disguise, for instance, so that no one wants to know who's having abortion.
And yet Restelle's, sometimes Rastille's, was a busy, publicly advertised practice. Are there ads for herbs or patent medicines that induce abortion?
Yes. Although they don't say that they're for abortion, there are ads there for restarting the flow, for managing menstruation, for general women's health that include everything from patent medicines to herbal remedies that date back to the 17th and 18th century.
And these are unequivocally abortion-inducing concoctions?
They would have certainly been understood as such.
So this is Thomas Jefferson's Notes on Virginia.
And Jefferson chronicled Native American abortion practice.
Thomas Jefferson mentions, again, without any kind of judgment, in his 1785 Notes on the State of Virginia, that indigenous women in Virginia routinely induce abortion through the use of particular herbs.
So he mentions here the women very frequently attending the men in their parties of war and hunting. Childbearing becomes extremely inconvenient to them. It is said, therefore, they have learnt the practice of procuring abortion by the use of some vegetable.
Here we have men writing about women doing this. And one of the frustrations that I have is that women's knowledge often doesn't get written down.
And what about enslaved Americans?
We have testimony of enslaved Black women talking about how, yes, when they would want to induce a miscarriage, they would take turpentine, for example, and the enslavers knew about this. And then so they would reformulate the turpentine that they used to make sure that it wouldn't work in that, actively trying to stop them because, of course, that would reduce the value of their property.
In the end, then, everyone at the Antiquarian Society insisted on just one thing. History tells more than one story about abortion.
Contested now, contested then.
Like so much else in the history of pluralistic America. For PBS News Weekend, Paul Solman.